welcome to Tabletop Game Talk, On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Fletcher.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about why games in our collections go unplayed. It's easy to say there's just not enough time, but is that the whole story? Why have games if you're not going to play them? What can we do to get unplayed games to the table more often, or should we even try? Have you asked yourself, does this game spark joy?
But first, thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jewel Jam, George Dia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, and Thomas Acciaretti. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well. All right, so as I mentioned last week, I said I was going to post Dice Tower News episodes in our feed, which I did. I just posted the prior week's episode. For the first like 6 hours, it was the wrong episode. So if you're wondering why your news was a week old, I just wanted to give you a taste of January as well as February. So now it's updated. We're going to keep doing that for February because Kitty and I like doing news, and we would love to get our listener input on that news and let us know what you think of it. And if you think that this is something you like or not like, I would listen to it if you guys did this, or I don't like that, or, you know, we are very scripted in that. So we're just looking for a little bit more feedback from the listeners who like us. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay. All right,
Kitty. Waiting for the listeners to give you feedback?
I was waiting. Oh, wait. That's another thing. So we're still playing around with Discord, and soon, this month, in the month of February, we will have this working. So we are going to... We record generally at the same time each week, usually.
Except today.
Except for today. So it's either Sunday or Monday nights at 8:30 we record. And so we will let our Patreons know when we're going to record, and we will send you invitations to our Discord server. And then you can actually listen to us in real time, also getting all the stuff that we don't actually put in the recording. And you can comment in real time. So when I say something wrong, you can say, hey, Chris, this is what you were thinking, or this is what this was supposed to be, or this is how you say that. And then hopefully we don't get overly distracted by that, because there'll be a lot of those corrections. But in any case, you can be part of the process if you want to be, if you want to join us on the Patreon stuff. So like I said, I will get all that working this month, and hopefully then I can actually wait for someone to respond back. And you guys are like, were you waiting for the listeners in real time? Yes. All two of them in the channel. Okay. This week we're talking about why games go unplayed. I'm talking about this because I have a whole lot of them and I need to analyze myself and say, okay, what can I do and get these games played? But I think we need a primer on this Marie What's-Her-Face. And Kitty, this is on you.
All right. So this is on me. All right. So Marie Kondo says that when you are evaluating whether or not you should keep something, you have to hold it in your hands and ask yourself if it sparks joy. If it does, you get to keep it. If it does not, you say thank you for all of the good you have done to me, and you let it go. And you donate it, you sell it, whatever it is, but you don't let it just keep sitting in your house. You have to take immediate action to move it on to its new purpose.
Does that involve matches?
It can.
Oh, okay.
As long as you have a fire extinguisher on hand.
So this is going to be one aspect of what we talk about today. It's like, if we have an unplayed game, why do we still have it, right? Because I have a ton of games that I've owned for definitely over a year, probably over 2 or 3 years now, of games that I have not played. Why do I still have them? And I'm curious. Now, I don't know what sparks joy means. I don't feel joy, so...
Chris is a robot. He does not have emotions.
All right, so go on Netflix and sparks. Watch Tidying Up.
I can't watch that show. I've watched it once, and I'm like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. I cannot watch this.
Oh, my gosh. I find her so charming. But she says it's like the feeling you get when you hold... She says a puppy, but I'm going to change it to a kitten for you because I know how you feel about puppies. But the feel of, like, you know, it's like a small cuddly animal. They're like, ah! Like, oh!
But this is what I feel like when I'm holding kittens, which I like cats. They're nice. And I look at kittens, I'm like, ouch, that was sharp, as they're clawing into my skin.
Okay, well, not when they're clawing you, kittens, but, like, you know, when they're sleepy, fuzzy, cuddly kittens.
All right, so sleeping kittens spark joy. If I get that feeling. All right, I'm going to go with I don't know if I feel joy.
How about when you hold your infant son? That feeling.
Okay, he's cute, but he's a lot of responsibility too. So there's, and that's what I feel like when I'm holding a game. I'm like, this is a cute game, but it's a lot of responsibility to own this and not play it. So they're very similar. Okay.
All right, so like you can separate though the responsibility from the joy, right? You know the separate feelings of them.
Okay. Yes.
So let's start with, I don't know, like, why do you feel guilty? Like, is there guilt associated with not playing them?
Sometimes. Sometimes there's guilt associated with not playing games because I'm like, I have these games. I went out and I spent a ton of money on some of these games because they were hard to get and I just wanted to have it and I haven't played it. So then I feel guilty about it. Or I play a game and I play it once. I'm like, okay, that's good. Why did I spend $75 on a game that I was fine playing only once? Why buy it at all? So there's that guilt in there. And then there are games that I really, really like and I feel bad because I hold the box. I'm like, I've never really done this, but hypothetically, I hold the box and I look at the box and I'm like, this game brought me a lot of joy, but I don't have people who want to actually play this game with me. So now it brings me sorrow because it would bring me joy if only other people would help.
So that's tricky. That's, I think, one of my biggest reasons why games go unplayed is because I don't have people to play them with me. And it could be games I really, really love, but if you don't have somebody to play with you, other people who also really, really love the game, they're just going to sit there and collect dust.
Yeah. So this is why we need to take the joy into consideration, but let's approach this from a number of different ways.
So the thing about sparking joy, and, you know, her book is on Audible, if you want to try that, it's much less irritating family oriented and more just her straightforward stuff. But so what she says is, you know, so something that used to spark joy, you don't have to hold on to it just because it used to. If it used to spark joy, it's done its service. It did its job, you know, and you can talk about like, you know, in the future, do I want to spend $75 on a game that I know I'm only going to play once? But that's a different question.
So I have a question.
Are already on your shelf, you just say like, it, what I spent on it was worth the joy that it brought me in the moment. And now it's not bringing me joy. So it is time for it to, you say, thank you for bringing me joy when you did, but now you no longer do. Go out into the world and find someone else to bring joy to.
Okay. So one, she's all like pro sunk costs. Like just because you spent money on it doesn't mean you need to keep it.
Yeah. Yep.
And two, she has no sentimentalness to her whatsoever. Like, I can't keep something because it once made me feel joy.
If it's still making you feel joy just because of its sentimental value, keep it. If it is only bringing you a burden despite the fact that it used to bring you joy, you don't keep it around out of guilt.
All right. Okay. Let's we got a lot of input on this, so let's go through some of these and see if we can circle back to this conversation and figure out what joy is when you're looking at board games. Because I think it is different. It's different, you know, that mind puzzle. Is that joy? I guess it could be. It depends on how you measure it. But it's fun. Yeah. Well, all right. We're just going to go down this list here because I got to start someplace. And we're going to start with Tim. Tim says he has a lot more unplayed games than he has played games. I think I flipped this where I'm probably 51% played games and 49% unplayed, but I'm still pretty close to this. But his problem is he brings games to game night, but nobody wants to play them. But he also has this issue where he feels he's a bad teacher of games and doesn't really offer to teach the games that he's bringing. So the situation here is he picks up a new game. He wants to play it. He brings it to his gaming group, but it sits there because nobody else wants to jump in and play that game. Maybe they know one has ever played it or not. And he doesn't want to teach the game. So then that game goes back home unplayed. What do you guys think of this one? Like, this seems like a completely legitimate thing. I mean,
it seems very common.
Yeah.
Like, when I have game nights at my place, usually it's like, okay, do I want to bring out a game that I've never played before and I've barely read the instructions and we're going to spend most of the time learning how to play this game? Or are we going to bring out a game that everybody's already played or something that I'm very familiar with and I can teach easily? It's usually the latter two. Yeah.
So I think this can be really tricky because it's very intimidating to teach a game. And the way I kind of got over this was I started by teaching games that I was very familiar with that had very simple, straightforward rules. So, because sometimes you can even get like so familiar with a game that you forget to say something in the rules. Like there's like a middle ground of like, it's simple, I know it, straightforward. And you teach a bunch of those games, or you teach the same one to different people over and over again. And then like you can like level yourself up, like work at it. It's a skill that you learn. And it is tricky, and sometimes you're trying to teach Wingspan and your brother-in-law is just giggling because they chose brown powers to activate instead of any other color in the universe. And it just gets so frustrating. But you know, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And there are so many good playthrough videos on YouTube now where you can watch the way they teach and learn from the people who are doing it well. Like, watch how they do it, watch what they're doing, and learn from them. I think that can be really helpful. And the more confident you become in teaching your games, the more you want to practice teaching games, the more you play your games.
Yeah, and I have the same problem of wanting to teach a game to a group for the first time. Like, there's a limited set of people that I'm willing to say, okay, we're going to sit down and I'm going to cold read these rules and we're going to get through this. And those people include essentially you guys, Sydney, and that's probably it. And even then, it's painful for everyone involved. So I totally understand this. One of the things I find that's a little bit easier is if I actually set the game up and play a few turns, even if it's by myself. Oftentimes I can rope Sydney into it saying, hey, come play a couple turns with me just so we can get the mechanics of the game down. So when we have people over, we've already played it a little bit and we can, you know, kind of jump from there.
I actually like to have my game out while I watch game playthroughs so I can set up and do what they're doing, like, in real time, and I'll like pause the video and go and like do the thing and then come back and watch the next step so that I, because doing and seeing are very different. And I think having the tactile, like the physical memory of what you're doing really helps ingrain something.
That's a good idea. I've never actually thought about doing that.
I actually have a TV mounted, and I understand this is not for
crazy
everybody.
Crazy person.
But, yes. But I have a TV mounted in my game room, which is specifically meant for YouTube. And, well, I do two things on there. One, there's a site that plays, like, board game music. You can type in any board game, and it'll play, like, a music soundtrack for it. So we'll play that sometimes on the TV. And
Wait. Music soundtrack to a board game.
Yes. So if you, and, all right, now I have to bring this up, and I'm going to bring it up right now in real time. So board game music is what I'm going to Google.
So if it's like, okay, Settlers of Catan.
And then it'll just start playing it. So it's called Melodice, MELODICE.org. And what happens is you click here and you can choose a board game. So you can type anything. So I'm going to type in Catan. And then when you click on Catan, if I click on this, it's going to actually start playing music. So I'm not going to do it. It'll come up with a YouTube soundtrack. And it just has like a playlist. And it just plays all of these different songs that are kind of in the Catan theme. So that's one thing I'll play on my TV.
I'm gonna try to break this. I'm gonna punch in Monopoly and see what happens.
I just closed it. Otherwise, I would totally do that. But I would guess you get a lot of capitalist music of some sort. I don't know what capitalist music.
Yeah, all like. That famous capitalist genre music.
You guys are getting me off here. But the other thing it does is YouTube, and I'll do how to play YouTube videos. So we can have that playing in the background. And I can set up the game on the table as I'm doing, and I'll hit pause and resume. So, but I'm going to jump ahead here to Christopher Vincent, who has something related to this. He says for him, one of the reasons that games go unplayed is a lack of interest in reading the rules in general. But he says how to play videos make it more likely a game is going to get played. So this is a really common thing, especially for bigger, heavier games. Pulling out those rule books, trying to get through that with the real problem is not if I have a group. If I know that people are going to come over and play this game with me, I have a mission to learn those rules. It's when I'm reading it and I don't know that I have people to play it with.
It's also really hard for like solo games or two-player games where Arkham Horror, the living card game, it is... Well, first of all, it's three rule books and it's so hard and I didn't get it. And like, I tried reading the first rule book and I was like, I don't know. And then I went back to the quick start, easy for beginners rule book. And I was still like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on here. Maybe I'll just watch a video. And like 15 seconds into the video, I was asleep. And maybe it was just, you know, my timing. I wasn't in the right space. I've gone much deeper down the rabbit hole since then. Maybe I'll give it another try, but...
So this is a good example of a game that went unplayed for me for a long time. And I listened to a podcast specifically on Arkham Horror, the living card game, called Mythos Busters. And they were just talking, and literally the one I was listening today, about the setup time in Arkham Horror and how they don't notice the setup time, but there's a lot of complaints that it takes a long time to set up and get everything going. But once you start playing it, it's just, it's very easy to do. Like, it just makes sense. So, but I get that where... when you first try to approach this game, it is so big, it's so massive, there's so much going on that you don't get the basic core mechanic of it. And I get it. I mean, like I said, it took me a year and a half to get that game to the table. And once I did, it's one of my most played games now, but it took so long to just get over that initial hurdle of teaching the game. All right, let's see. Christopher Vincent also, just to finish off his input, because I think he has a couple other cool ideas here. He makes it a point to play two new games a month, but the key here is he has a group to support that. So his group will also play new games, and that's one of the things they do, is try to play two new games a month, which I think that I'm going to have to do that at least while I'm on paternity leave to get through all of my games. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But another thing that he does to kind of help him do that is he limits his collection to 50 games, around 50 games, making it very obvious the games that are unplayed. So those kind of bubble up to the top. Like, his collection's small enough where he can kind of manage all of this. And the only reason he would keep a game that's not played very often is if it's like a collectible and it's small, like, you know, maybe a superhero collectible type of game or something like that. Your guys' collections are both relatively manageable at this point. So, Fletcher, I'm interested. You have probably the smallest collection. How many unplayed games do you have?
I have about 5 unplayed games. One of them is Star Trek Frontiers, which is on my list. But again, it's one of those big board games. A couple of which you gave me. Castle Ravenloft and the other Driss one. They're by the same manufacturer.
The D&D Adventure System games.
Yeah, the D&D. So I have a couple of those that I haven't actually played yet. And then I have a couple of, like, party games that I haven't played, like Apples to Apples and What Do You Meme?
What Do You Meme?
Yeah. My brother loves that game.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet, but it was like a gift, and like everyone got this one gift this one time, and I just haven't played it yet.
Games you get as gifts are so hard.
Yeah.
Like, yes. So many. So I Marie Kondo'd my games. I went through and I asked what sparked joy, and I looked and I got rid of, and I would say 75% of the games that I donated or put in a box and put in Chris's basement to give away at Gen Con were games that I was given as gifts. Games, especially from people who know that I'm into board games, but they're not really part of the hobby. So they just kind of like, oh, this is a board game. Kitty likes board games. I'll get this for her. Those kind of games were the ones that I passed on to find new homes.
Yeah, Joe actually mentioned this. He mentioned a couple games that he has that are unplayed. One of them is Alien Artifacts, which I had commented on quite a while ago, I believe. And so he picked that one up and hasn't played it. Alien Artifacts is a good game, but it is it's just a deck building game, but the rules can be heavier than they need to be for a deck building game. And then the other one was Brass Lancashire, which he got as a gift. And this is another one that went unplayed. Now, Brass is a highly rated game, like, it's especially the reprint of it. Great game, but he got it as a gift, and he's finding it hard to find a group to play with because he didn't buy it with a group in mind. He got it, and now he has to go out and look for a group that's willing to play this pretty heavy Euro game with not a streamlined rule set, and he has to learn it. And some of these things I'm just kind of putting in Joe's, well, not mouth, but finger typing stuff. Fingertips, yes. But I understand, like, how that feels. It's just like, okay, this could be a good game, But I wasn't invested in it in the first place. But now I feel like I need to keep it because it's a gift and I need to find someone to play it with. It can be a problem. It's not bringing joy.
I will say that not all of the games that I've received as gifts were ones that got passed down. Just a lot that I have donated were ones that were gifts. So it's not that like, oh, all people who give me gifts are bad at giving me gifts. You know, it was just that a lot of the ones that were not sparking joy for me anymore were ones that I had not picked out for myself. And, you know, Marie Kondo has a whole thing about gifts you've received. And, you know, the joy of a gift is in receiving the gift. So once you have received it, you have received the joy. And if the object itself is not bringing you further joy, you know, time to get it out of there.
This is why gifts I'm giving these days, I try to make them as disposable as possible. As in, typically like food or something, right? Like something that you can just consume and be done with. Keyforge decks, those are great because they're nice and, you know, put them on a shelf someplace, bring them down. But if you need to, you can just kind of toss them away. It's just, you know, a deck of cards, no big deal. But I try to keep it simpler. But Joe continues, though, he does say that the one game that he does keep is Terra Mystica, because it's his number one game. And even though his friends don't want to play it with him anymore, probably because it's your number one game, Joe, Terra Mystica is a very, very, I don't know if it's strategy or tactics. I think it's both, probably strategic game where every turn matters. Like that first opening turn, you can just mess yourself up for the entire game. So if you're good at Terra Mystica, you are going to beat people in Terra Mystica. So I can understand why people don't want to play it if you're not at the same level. But he says it still brings him joy, so he still keeps it nonetheless. But yeah, all right, all right, all right. All right, Cyan, Cyan? I got this wrong last time. Cyan. Okay, I'm going to go with Cyan. And he even sent me an email like how to say it. And
Oh, great.
I know.
I didn't take the time to read it.
No, it was a long time ago. It was at least a week or two.
Yeah, this was a while ago. Yeah.
But, all right. So he has some input on this. He says, it's hard for him to get two-player games to the table since his significant other is not a gamer. But he does enjoy collecting IP games like Star Wars and hopes to get those games to the table when his kids are older. So for him, like two-player games, he's not getting a group together, so it's hard to play. But if he gets a group together, he can play more than two players, I'm assuming. But he'll collect a lot of Star Wars stuff, too, not because he can play it now, but because he has kids and is hoping to, like, mold the kids into more hardcore gamers.
Indoctrinate.
Exactly. I like that. That is the word.
Make your kids the geeks you want to hang out with. That's why you become a parent, isn't it?
That's why I'm going to become a parent. So if Zach doesn't want to play games by the time he's 8, he will, you know, basically you can give kids up for adoption at that age. It's fine. It's like, sorry, you didn't turn out the way I wanted you to. So later.
Oh, my gosh. Player 3 is already like, I didn't know that a 1-year-old could be such a reader. Today he brought me a book and he stood at my feet screaming because I couldn't stop making dinner to read him a book. And I was like, what? I've created a monster. It's great.
Sometimes you get what you wish for, and that's just how that works. So, Kitty, you will get Spencer to play games with you at times, right? So you don't really have a problem with two-player games.
Yeah.
But Fletcher, how often do you get Carmen to sit down and just play a two-player game with you?
It doesn't happen very often. She's definitely open to it, but she is in her master's program, so she doesn't have like a ton of free time. But she is open to it, like, occasionally and with groups of people.
I will say that when I started doing the podcast, Spencer was kind of in the same boat where he enjoyed games. He was open to playing them. We didn't really have a lot of two-player games in our collection, so that's kind of a niche I've filled since then. And because I'm part of the podcast, I was like, well, it's become more important to me to have played more games. So it made him more willing to like play games that we might not have gotten off of our shelves otherwise. So I think having a good reason to play games, even if it's just like a promise you've made to yourself, a commitment, these 10 by 10s, something like that, having a podcast, putting up a blog, I'm going to tweet out all the games I play this year, whatever it is, you know, that's going to keep you more accountable to getting your games played more often.
And at the end of the episode, we have a new challenge that I didn't even know it existed.
Ooh. But
Yeah.
I haven't read the show notes. So this is going to be a surprise for me.
I'm actually looking forward to this. When I read this, I'm like, it made sense that it existed, but I never realized it. So I'm looking forward to taking on this new challenge. Let's see. This is a Board Game Geek name. So I'm going to say Gurza's Nut. We've said this name before, but anyway, he says he went on a buying spree last year, buying a lot of games that were on clearance on Cool Stuff Inc. And for the reason of building a collection for his kids in the future, so they don't have to play like, you know, a Hasbro Games or Milton Bradley or something like that. Yeah. He's building up a collection. But these games are currently going unplayed because his kids are too young to play it. His wife also put the kibosh on buying more games once she found out what he was doing. But she's cool with it now. But so I think that's interesting. And then he also said the games that he buys for himself that usually go unplayed is due to not having the right people to play with. And I think this is a common theme is we all have different... I'm going to equate this back to like spicy levels, right? Everyone has a certain level of spice that they are okay with. And if I like really, really spicy food, yeah, sure, I can eat a milder spice. That's fine. But I'm not truly enjoying it. But my really spicy food that I really want to enjoy with other people, there's very few people out there that are willing to go to that level. But when I find them, I have to like latch on to them. I think that goes the same for like board games, just in general. Like you want to find people that are at your same level. And if you don't, you have to come down to the level of the gamers around you and maybe kind of itch up their spice level a little bit whenever you can by sneaking in some extra Tabasco.
I think you're mixing metaphors.
I'm really excited to see you start putting like 1, 2, 3 chili peppers on your games to rate their spiciness level.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Like a Chinese food menu.
So Board Game Geek basically has all kinds of stats on all different types of games. And one of the things they have on there is complexity, which is a rating from 1 to 5. Which is supposed to basically encapsulate all of these little, you know, how hard is the game to learn, to play, etc.
How spicy is it?
How spicy is it? Exactly. So it could be a spicy rating. So I don't know. I mean, and Fletcher, I think you are of that level where you could eat the spicy games. Still mixing this metaphor, but I'm just going to milk it.
We're sticking with it.
But the people that are generally around you are of a lesser spicy level than you. And
yes.
So you just need to be around us more often.
I need to find spicier friends.
Exactly.
You know, it's so easy to be around us because, you know, we're totally available all the time and not caring for small children.
Yeah. Whatever.
And you guys don't live like an hour away in opposite directions.
In opposite directions, yeah.
That is a good point. Yeah, there is just no good way.
Technically, so. I'm in the middle.
You are in the middle. And we know there's still no good way to get to you either because there's no like direct trains or anything. No matter what, it's traffic and driving. But we're going to make this work because I have a lot of unplayed games and I need to get people to play them with me. And Sydney is great. She will play games with me all day long. But I feel like, and sometimes I'm torturing her because she has her flavor of games that she likes. And I have a wider range of games that I like. So if I make her play a game, she's like, yeah, that was all right. And then it makes me feel like, I really wanted to like this game, but I can't because she didn't like it. So now I'm just going to put it on the shelf and I'll never play it again.
Guess I'm not playing this one again.
Exactly. So sometimes I can get her to play it again. All I have to do is ask, and she's never been like super resistant. She's like, can we play something else? So we did play Bob Ross, The Art of Chill. Because she started...
Awesome.
Well, she started her own collection of games, so she has her own shelves now. And of the games that she hasn't played, she's been pulling them down and setting them up when I'm out, and I'll come home, and it'll be set up. And she's like, okay, we're going to play this game now. I'm like, you just ambushed me with my own strategy, so I can't say no. It was actually pretty good, though. It's not a bad game. I have to say,
really?
Bob Ross, The Art of Chill, is way better than I expected it to be. I would definitely play that game again.
I feel like we pulled out the rules one time, looked at it, and went, ugh.
I think that there was a couple other Bob Ross games too, but I don't know. Like I had never opened this before. We saw it at a convention and we picked it up. You can pick it up at Target now. It's like it's everywhere, but it's a nice little casual game with some pretty cool decisions. And it's kind of fun.
I'm trying to remember if this was at Origins or Gen Con. All I remember is there was a guy dressed as Bob Ross, and Sydney's like, well, I have to buy this game now.
I'm pretty sure it was Origins 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So not last Origins, but the Origins before that. Yep. All right. I think that's, clearance, building collections. I'm not sure that I am building a collection for my son just yet. I still think I'm too much cult of the new to tuck things away for him. But I do think that some of my heavy miniature games, those ones I'll keep simply because those will be action figures. I'll just open up the box, unload it, and his imagination can make the little figures do whatever he wants. It's like the Army Green Men of the current generation is all the extra plastic from board games. All right. Aaron says, Gloomhaven is the reason he hasn't played a lot of games. Which
that's acceptable.
Yes. But this, you can kind of open this up to a larger topic, right? Basically, one game becomes the game you play, and the other games don't so much because they just kind of fall into the background. This was Keyforge for, you know, essentially all of December and January. And, you know, where it started becoming the game and I had to actively play other games.
And our group that we've been doing, it's been Betrayal Legacy. Whenever we get together, it's like we have to play that. And I think the legacy games and campaign style games really suck you into that. They really are built to keep you playing them.
Yep. And that's what I really like about them, too, is they're kind of geared to keep hitting the table because you get invested in them and you want to bring it out and you want to continue that storyline. So it's sort of a mixed thing when you talk about these longer campaign games. You know, Fletcher, you're playing Kingdom Death Monster with George and Derek. Do you, like, when you guys get together, do you ever play other games besides that? Or is that kind of like your group game?
No, it's pretty much our group game. It cycles between Gloomhaven and Kingdom Death, which are like two giant, huge games. And it really just depends on the location. At one location, we play one game. The other location, we play the other game.
Because those games are not moving locations.
No, they're not.
Yeah, and you have about 3 years worth of gameplay with those games. And longer if you're only playing like a couple times a month.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's what it is.
Yeah, so I totally get that. Aaron does say he's looking forward to heavier games like CO2, his 18XX game, and Anachrony, which is funny because besides the 18XX game, which I don't have a strong interest in playing, if someone were to pull me at a convention and say, hey, let's go play this train stock trading game, I'd be like, okay, I'll play it. But with CO2 and Anachrony, those are also games that I have that I really want to play, but have not hit the table due to the complexity of the rule set and just having to learn how to play it, then teaching someone else how to play it. There's just a lot of work. It's a lot of like pre-work in getting those games to the table. All right, let's see. Next we have here Corey. Corey has gone through phases where acquiring games is what brings him joy. And occasionally have phases where having the unplayed games brings him stress, but this one I get just collecting, just buying games, not playing them, buying and having them, or the hunt for a rare game or something like that. That is what brings me joy. And then later, that's what brings me that anxiety of, why do I have all these games? I'm not playing them. Why did I need to get it at the time? I have a game that I bought at Gen Con simply because at the booth, they're like, yeah, we only printed 500 copies of this. Like, that's the only, they only exist 500 copies. I'm like, I'll take it and all of the expansions and extra material you'll have for it as well.
It's the collector's problem. It has absolutely nothing to do with playing the game when you're making the purchase. And you really need to stop and tell yourself, and I think you've done a lot of work towards this in the last couple of years, the way you've been saying, oh, I'm only going to kickstart. Last year, it was one game a week. And now you're down to 10 games in the year of 2019. You know, you're really, so you have to stop and really take a look at why you're buying the games. And are the exclusives that important to you? And if you're telling yourself, I'm going to buy this because it's exclusive, because I need to have it up for my collection, and you get it and you put it in your collection, it makes you feel great, then good, you did a good job. But if you put it in your collection and it's a pile of guilt because you never play it, then you need to really look at what is the purchase worth it? And you need to make those decisions at the time of purchase, not at the time of sitting on your shelf. And I think that's a really hard thing for the hobby as a whole.
Yeah. Well, Arcadia Quest is one of those games that I really, really love. And it's a super collectible game because there's all these special promo figures and Kickstarter exclusives and things like that. And I finally collected everything. The moment I bought the last figure, I'm like, okay, I'm done collecting it. And it hasn't hit the table since, which is not good because I really like this game. It's just, I've collected everything for it. So there's nothing else to track down. But then they come out with the Riders expansion, and I bought three of those expansions. I have no idea why. I don't remember why I bought three of them, but I bought three for, again, I don't know. I think I ordered it. I pre-ordered it on one site, and then I ordered it through Kickstarter, and then I think I ordered an extra copy on Kickstarter. So now two of them are going to be at Gen Con. So and by that I mean we're going to be giving them away at Gen Con. So
we're going to be playing them, so get ready.
Yeah. Yes. Only playing Riders. That's it. That's just a bunch of mounts running around. But yeah, it is. I do have a collector's problem, and that's why I'm trying to pull back on that quite a bit. I'm trying to stick with buying expansions of games I actively play and being really selective on the new games I bring in. Just trying.
You need a spreadsheet. No. I love my spreadsheet. I love it so much. It is the best spreadsheet, and I'm sure Sydney could set you up an even cooler spreadsheet than mine. Yeah, I bet she knows how to do so many cool spreadsheet things. And once you have it set up, it is so easy to look and see, what games have I backed? What have I ordered? And then you look and see, oh, I already did this. I don't need to do it two more times, you crazy person.
Now, I will say that Board Game Geek has a very, very good user database that you can mark everything about a game, how often you played it, do you want it, own it, trade it, you can track everything with it, and it links into a bunch of other gaming tools. So, and I tried doing that, but that turned out to be an amount of extra meta work that I just didn't want to do, because it's like, okay, now I'm getting these games and it's becoming a chore because I have to track it, log it, if I played it. I don't track my plays because it just seems like an extra thing I have to do that's not part of the fun for me. Now, a lot of people do have fun tracking plays. And for those people, that's fantastic because I envy the stats that they can get.
I love hearing all the different systems that people have going on, all the post-its, all the spreadsheets, all the apps. I'm a collector of the way that people track their plays, but I never actually track my own plays.
So, but yeah, I don't know. Fletcher, have you ever enjoyed just the acquiring games? Have you gone out I want this game because it looks amazing, or I heard something great about it or something like that, but then not played it?
That pretty much happens to me anytime I go into a board game store. There's so many games that I haven't played, and they all look shiny and new and have interesting box art. And I'm like, I just want all of these games. And it's just a struggle for me to just not purchase all of them. It also helps I live in a small place and I don't have any place to put them all. And Carmen would kill me if I came back with more games. So that's a motivator.
So that actually brings up a good point. So Christopher Dong says, and I love Christopher, he is amazing, because he and I have a lot in common in that we both have an excessive amount of games. So I'm leaning on him to justify our excessive collection. He says, unplayed games can bring joy too. If the box is cool to look at, sure. If it brings you back good memories of researching the game and what it was to get that game in the first place. If the Kickstarter campaign was enjoyable, there was good comment threads, or the developer, was engaged. Yep. If you look forward to playing the game sometime, and that alone brings you joy because you have this game and someday you're going to get it to the table, and that's just going to be awesome. He also adds in a more cynical way that unplayed games can't disappoint you. So,
well, I think this is getting to what Kitty said. Basically, this person, this theoretical person, is a collector of games, maybe not necessarily a player of games. Well, I mean, probably both,
but
yes.
But they get joy from just collecting them, and that's perfectly fine if that's what you want to do.
And as long as they're bringing you joy in some way, they're a good part of your collection. It's only when the guilt of not playing them starts to outweigh the joy of having it there, that it's time to maybe move it out of your collection.
Yeah, part of having a great collection, too, is you get to show it off. And again, we had some friends over the other day.
Hashtag shelf candy.
Exactly. And they were talking, so they consider themselves gamers, where they will have game nights and such. But their games are, did you play the Star Wars Monopoly? It's so much fun. So that's the kind of gamers that they are. And I'm like, you know, I'm just, these are friends of Sydney's. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I know Star Wars Monopoly. And, you know, the only real mainstream games I have are like Risk Monopoly or something like that. Not Risk Clue. Monopoly. Risk, Star Wars Risk. Maybe Clue. And I'm like, but you should take a look at our game room. So I led them over there. And they looked at it. And they couldn't even comment on it. Like, nothing was recognizable. It might as well have been just a library of books written in Greek, because it meant really nothing to them. And I'm like, I'm really proud of my collection, and you can't even understand why this collection is cool. And it's not their fault. I mean, it's my fault, really. But at a certain point, I'm just like, huh, I just wanted you to be more impressed. And it was over your head, so you couldn't be impressed at all. So that made me sad. Just a little bit, though.
They're like, how many copies of Monopoly do you have? And you're like, no, this is Risk and Monopoly.
Yeah. Well, because I was like, we have Risk Legacy and we have Star Wars Risk. And Star Wars Risk is nothing like Risk. But Risk Legacy is a lot like Risk. But they're like what's Risk Legacy? And like, well. But they did mention that their friends had played this board game where it was – like, you had to play the same game. Oh, no. What they said is you played the game a certain number of times, and then you threw it away. And then they were looking for the next game in the series, and it was going to cost them like $150. And they just could not comprehend why you would ever play a game that you're just going to eventually throw away. And I'm like, oh, you're talking about Pandemic Legacy. It's like, oh, yeah, that. I'm like, and I tried to explain to them why that was cool, and it just did not compute. It was like, yeah, I don't get why you would whatever throw away a board game. Why wouldn't you just play it over and over? And it's like, well, it's not that kind of game.
If you're interested in that, I have a podcast where we talk about this for an hour. Literally. We did a whole episode on this, didn't we?
We did. We did an entire episode on Pandemic Legacy Season 1 as a side chat.
Yeah.
The easy analogy is like, you consume this board game like you consume food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said like you consume a Netflix original series. Yep, you're going to watch it once, you're going to binge it, and then you're probably not going to go back to it. And if you do, it's going to be way further down, and then you can, you know, pick up another copy if you really wanted to. So they still didn't quite get that. And they're like, yeah, but it's a board game. Like, like I know. Let's see. Next, someone else here. Nate. For him, it's not about the time, but about the gaming group, which his group plays very casually. So more complex games just sit on the shelves, just waiting for the right group to come along. So Nate is also in that category where finding the right people is sort of the problem. And how do we fix this? Like, how is it that, because we're in a big city. We live at least in and around the Chicagoland area. We have friends that we can kind of bring into the group and will play with us, or just basically the industries we work in and stuff. We have similar interests. If someone was in the middle of nowhere, how would you like get gamers? Like, what do you guys think would be a good way of getting hardcore gamers over to like try something new? How do you meet friends as an adult is the real question.
I don't know. All of my friends are people I've known for a very long time, or people I met through work or Spencer's work. I don't know. I've questioned this sometimes because it's tricky. It's really tricky to find people to play games with you when you've burned out everyone in your circle. And I know, like, we have the internet. We should be able to solve this. And Meetup, I've heard lots of people have really good experiences, but I also know people who have really bad experiences. Facebook group, like, invites, looking at your, if there is a local gaming store, something like that, but not every community has a gaming store. It's really hard. I don't know how to crack that one.
That might be why, like, people just get discouraged and don't bother. Ultimately, yeah. Because it's like, I'm into like these really hardcore games and I can't find anybody to play them with.
Well, and there's a tricky thing here too, because what is, when you're playing board games, are you playing it because you really enjoy the game or because you enjoy the people you're playing the game with? If it's the former, you're playing it because you really enjoy the game, which a lot of like competitive type games, if you're playing Magic or, you know, any like of tournament style game, it's more about the game than the people you're playing against. And I think it's easier to find people to compete against in some of these more popular dueling style games. But if you're talking about, you know, just pick any game, we'll just choose Catan. Are you playing Catan because you truly love the game of Catan? Or are you playing it because when you play it as a group, you enjoy the experience you're getting from that group of people? And if that's the reason, maybe random people isn't going to give you that feeling you want from that board game. Maybe Catan sucks when you're playing with three random strangers.
I think some of it, I think it's both. I don't think it can be just, because if it's just the group of people you're hanging out with, then why are we bothering to play a game at all? You know, we could just sit around and hang out and chat. There's something about the game. There's something about the gameplay, the being there to win, whatever it is that makes you want to play a game. It's not just the people you play with. On the other hand, the people you're playing with are also very important. So they can, I think, elevate the experience of playing a good game, or they can ruin a game. But I don't think they can be the only reason you're playing the game.
Yeah, I guess I could see that because, like, different friends, you're going to have different conversations with. So if you have friends at work, when you're with those friends, whether you're outside of work or not, you're oftentimes talking about work or people at work or things in that circle. And that's just what that group does. Then you also have people that you just game with. And when you're together, you don't know really what the other person does on their free time. It doesn't matter. When you're together, you have this common interest, and that's what you talk about. You talk about this game or that game. Or, hey, did you hear Tom talk about this particular new review or something like that? So it's that circle of friends you've built around the gaming hobby. So I guess if you take it that way, maybe meet up and maybe, you know, just getting out there on the internet is the way to meet new people.
Also, conventions. Yes. I don't know why I didn't think about that. A lot of our listeners have talked before about they go to conventions because it is the only time once a year they go to big convention in their area, or they gear up and go to Gen Con, whatever it is. They go there because that's the only time they get to play the kinds of games they want to play. Mm. And they're really good resources. And a lot of times you can meet people at conventions where you can get together throughout the year to play. You can make those connections over the table that you want to keep up. So yeah. I recommend conventions.
So Fletcher, you want to play more games, heavier games. You knew conventions existed. Why have you never actually thought of going to a convention to play these heavier games with people there?
I guess it wasn't really like, I have the friend group, right? Like, I know you guys, and I know people that will play heavier games. So that wasn't really the problem. It was just kind of like getting the opportunity and the time to do it, not necessarily finding the people. So I would say, like, that is where I'm coming from. It's more of like a time issue for me.
And actually taking, you know, a long weekend off to go to a convention could also be a time issue, especially, you know, if you don't have a normal quote-unquote 9-to-5 job Monday through Friday with vacation time, it can be hard to take the weekends off. Like, a lot of people work nights and weekends. You know, pretty much the majority of my life, well, maybe not now, I'm pretty old, but the majority of my early life was nights and weekends. That's just when I worked. So if I were to go to a convention, I'm essentially taking off a work week, which costs a lot of money because you're not making anything in those, usually in those situations, to go play games, which then you have to say, okay, what is the priority here, right? Do I, you know, spend hundreds of dollars to go play a couple board games, or do I say, okay, fine, I'm just not going to play this game. I need to eat.
And on top of the cost of not working, it's also you're traveling, you're at a hotel, you're eating out all weekend. It's not an inexpensive choice to make. But I do think people who are lucky enough to live local to bigger conventions, that can be a great way. But yeah, you gotta get lucky with that one.
Yep. Well, and fortunately or unfortunately, I think fortunately, board gaming conventions are becoming bigger well, more and more and more. If you Google board gaming conventions and give it a zip code, probably a city, whatever the biggest city you live next to, you're going to find some conventions, some weekends, whether it's in a church basement or a small hotel conference room or the Indianapolis Convention Center, you're going to find a convention that's relatively nearby and is within the next few months from you. We're not, like we mentioned last week, you know, we're not going to go to a lot of conventions this year, but I'm still going to like...
Compared to some years.
Compared to some, right. But I'm still going to like seven, and five of them are within our drive of my house. Again, I'm in the Chicago area, but most of these conventions are not. You know, they just happen to be in Wisconsin, you know, Chicago. The Midwest is a very, very tabletop gamer-friendly location, so there's a little bit of a skewing there.
I grew up in Texas, and like, it really wasn't until I moved here that I would hear the phrase like game night, because it's like game night. Like, what is that? Like, you sit around and play Monopoly. That sounds kind of boring, because in Texas and a lot of like, I don't know,
warmer areas,
warmer areas. Like, you can go outside in the middle of winter and it's only 55 degrees. It's not terrible. You can still go camping if you want to.
Yeah. When we had our polar vortex, when we had our polar vortex, that's a hard thing to say. We didn't go outside, but we had a ton of board games that we could play. Now, we didn't do that either because we were sleep deprived with a newborn. But that's what we would have been doing, is playing games, because that's what you do in the Midwest when it gets cold. And, you know, it's no wonder that that's where role-playing games were invented, right? It was basically Wisconsin. And there's just a lot of indoor activities that we have to entertain ourselves with. So it does become easier in the Midwest. Moral of the story, if you're having problems finding people to game with, move to the Midwest. All right. Jesse has another solution, though. See that segue? So what Jesse has found out is his family doesn't really enjoy gaming as much as he does. So he's been focusing on single-player games or games with solo-play options. If it weren't for single-player options, many of his games would go unplayed. Now, this is interesting to me because I was also in this camp where I would loved buying... Because before I started doing the podcast... I was really interested in the board game hobby. So this is where I was at, where I just didn't have a lot of people to play with. And I would get games that said solo on it, but I would end up never actually playing them. Now, recently, I've played more and more solo games and, you know, solo versions of games, and they've gotten really, really good. And it is absolutely worth like checking out and trying, because this is a great way. Number one, it kind of gets you into that game. So if you did bring someone else and you wanted to teach the game, you could. But number two, you can try all kinds of these games. You know, you still haven't tried the Wingspan solo version, right?
I have not, because I left it at my parents' house. And, you know, the problem I have with solo versions of games is that often you still have to get out a million pieces. And sometimes when I do this during the baby's nap time. So I only have, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours if I'm lucky. And you can never really guess when the exact endpoint's going to be. So having everything cleaned up and put away and not choking hazards lying around where he can get to them is a little bit trickier than playing a digital version or reading a book or something else.
Or having a designated game day or night where you have multiple people that can help pass the kids around.
Now that he has a regular bedtime, I can game so much more easily every night after like 7:45. I'm like, I could do a thing. It feels great.
So Fletcher, you said you used to play solo as a kid. Have you ever gone back to that as an adult and played a game that was actually designed to be solo?
No, but that's what I'm looking to do, which I think the Star Trek game that I have, the Frontiers, that does have a solo campaign, and that's something that I'm wanting to try and do.
I highly recommend it. I want to hear all about it. It's based off of the Mage Knight. It's basically a port of the Mage Knight system, but Mage Knight the board game, which has been the number one rated solo game on BoardGameGeek for years. Right. So I would expect that it would be a really cool campaign to play.
Yeah. But as a kid, like it was basically playing Risk by myself or Monopoly by myself or Stratego by myself, as I said before. But like
that was amazing to me, actually. I wonder where the bomb is.
Exactly. Or even like playing chess or checkers by myself, because I was an only child and my mom was busy doing things and my dad was at work and they didn't have time to like sit down and play with me, really. So
I actually find it fascinating that checkers a little bit too, especially when you're younger, but they are actually very, very good solo games, because you, as long as you can always try to beat the board and not worry about taking sides, those games are very soloable. And it's kind of fun to play against yourself in those situations, like I do with KeyForge.
Even as a kid, I found myself, like, you know, taking a side. You still learn from taking a side. Even if you're not playing fair against yourself, you're still learning something about the game. You don't actually have to play fair in those kinds of games where you're playing against yourself. Games that you have to follow the rules, or you are making it easier against the board, or you're looking, like, peeking through the deck, like changing your decisions, those are the ones that I find much harder to keep honest with myself.
Yep. So I think the moral of the story is here, solo games can get you some plays. And if you have games that you haven't played because you don't have a group for it, check out the solo mode. Like, don't discount it right away. If you can set up the game and play it solo, you may find that it's quite fun. And I've accidentally done that, where I'll start playing the solo version and go through and play the entire game, because I was just going to play a couple turns to see how it played, and just then I just keep playing. Yep.
Yeah.
Because it also... Like, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say that, like, even games that aren't technically solo... I don't know, maybe there's not, like, a solo mode, but, like, I'm thinking of Pandemic or even Gloomhaven.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, you can play those games completely solo. I know there's technically solo modes for those, but it's like, you don't really need... If you're the type of person that's going to, like, kind of dictate what's going to happen anyway, just go ahead and dictate everything.
Yep. Basically, almost every, co-op game can be played solo. And the great thing about playing a game solo is the downtime is non-existent. You're never going to wait for anyone else to take their turn.
1, 2, 3, go. 1, 2, 3,
right,
go.
Done. Okay, a couple more. This is going to run a little long, but we have to go through a couple more of these. Miles has a rather large collection. He has it split into three parts: miniature games that see some play, casual to moderate games that see a lot of play, and then the harder games, like more hardcore games that don't get a lot of play, and or if any at all. But he's hoping to raise his kids to be gamers, so that's good. Also, Miles, we did get your email, and we're going to cover tons of it in our feedback episode next week. He asked on the BGG thread. Cindy... her thing is, she made a geek list of shame on BGG last July, where she listed 25 games and just recently checked it because she knew this was coming up, and she's played three of them and just needs to add a whole bunch more. That so the list is growing, not shrinking. She has a few reasons for not playing, which I think we've covered most of these. This is actually a good one we haven't covered. Sometimes the game time has passed and it used to be hot once, but it's not now.
That doesn't bother me at all.
To me, it does. It's like, if it's the new hotness, I'm more likely to play it than if it's like the moment's past. Sometimes something better comes along that replaces it before you get it to the table. This is entirely possible. Sometimes the acquisition is the thrill of it. It's not about, it's more like, you know, the thrill of tracking it down once you have it. It's a different type of motivation to actually get it to the table. Sometimes the rules will burn your brain. So we've talked about that, how it's just, there's just too much there in trying to teach yourself a complicated game. This one I love. Sometimes punching out and organizing the components is enough by itself. I don't need to play the game afterwards. She mentions a number of spelled games in this category. And let's see. And a lot of it is, sometimes a game requires more players than you have. So I think all of these are like very good, like a good list of reasons for not playing games.
You skimmed over a part of Miles' comment that I really enjoyed, which is he will be raising his kids to be hopefully gamers. And that is really something, you know, putting those eggs in that basket early. I'm on board with that one.
Yep. All right. Now, the promise of a new challenge. So CNH Schmidt. Yeah, is that right? Schmidt? I think so. Yep. And I have to think this is two people's accounts, maybe with the CNH. But I know that she's given us a lot of good input, and this one, or good input in other places, but this one is my favorite. So in that, she is doing the Get Your Magic Number to Zero Challenge. What this is you track your unplayed games and you try to get that number down to zero. Now, this seems obvious, right? It seems like, okay, but now when you put a challenge behind this, because she's also doing a 10x10 challenge, or at least on BGG, Sarah has a badge that says so. Once you put this challenge around it, it kind of adds a structure and it gamifies your game playing to a point where, like, this makes sense. So what she's doing is she is making a list, and let's see here. She's making a list of games and is not buying any new games until she's played every game she owns now. If there is ever a motivator, if I said I am not buying any games until I've played every game I own, I guarantee I'm going to be playing those games or giving them away so I don't own them anymore as quickly as possible so I can consume more games, because I really do like buying games. I'm not going to do that. I'm not making that promise right now. But I do think that this is a great idea. And the whole spreadsheet thing, I don't really want to track via spreadsheet games I've owned and when I've played them and all of that. But tracking in a spreadsheet of games that I own that I need to play still, and maybe even putting a little reason next to it as to why I haven't played, that could actually motivate me to get more of these games to the table. Because, like, Anachrophy, I think so, whatever the time traveling one is. I haven't played that because the rules look complex and I need at least three people to play it. Okay, so complex rules, I can take the time to learn that through videos, and getting people to play it, all right, I can put out a call to saying, hey, I want to play this game, who's in, and set up a time. And if I have a spreadsheet that says, this is what I need to do to get these games to the table, I think I could do that.
I think this is going to be your new post-it wall. You took down your 10x10 post-it wall from last year, and now your wall looks bare. And I think if you write up every game you have not played and a reason why, every time you go into your game room, you see it, you know, and how, like, the satisfaction of taking those off the wall as you play them, I can only imagine.
Yeah. For the longest time, when I actually had things I had to accomplish at work, I would do sticky notes, and it'd be sticky notes all around the monitor. And when I completed a task, I'd pull off the sticky note. I converted it to just basically pencil and paper, and then I'd cross off the piece of paper, the thing on there. But that feel of crossing something off is motivating to doing those things on that list. And then you tend to, like, you do the smaller things first. So it's like, oh, I have six games here that are only going to take me an hour to play. Why not just get those off the list? That's six things I can cross off real quick. So I like this idea. I like this get your number to zero. Play the games that you bring into your collection, because otherwise, why bring them into your collection?
I'm curious what my number is now, because I did just go through my collection and I got rid of, it was a small moving box of games. And I think most of those were my unplayed games. And I really don't know now how many of mine have not made it to the table. I'm guessing it's under five.
I was going to say the CNH Schmidt, like, this is kind of like a common tactic that I use actually when playing video games. Like, I will not purchase another video game until I've completed all the video games that I've kind of accumulated. And I've heard of other people doing the same kind of tactic, because otherwise you'll start halfway through a video game and then
never go back.
Cult of the new, like, oh, here's a new one that came out and you'll buy that one, and then you won't finish the other one. And then you have all these half-played video games. So I think this strategy would work actually really well with, like, just getting your board game to the table, getting the game to the table, and just figuring out why, like, let's play this. I'm not going to, you know, worship at the cult of the new for, you know, maybe the next X amount of months or X amount of games, so I can actually play these games that I've invested in and that at least at one point I thought I would like to play.
And you can even break it into smaller chunks too. Like, all right, here's my list of games I want to, like, need to play, and have a column for I've read the instructions or I've watched a video. So now I basically have a general idea of how this plays. You know, I've set a time for getting people together, or write down the names of people that you think might be interested in playing this game so that you can figure out a time to set it up. So you can create this, like, really gamify this process of, we're going to make this work. And I was putting the notes together today on this, and when I read this here, I'm like, this is perfect. This is what I'm going to do. Again, not buying anything new.
But not
don't
this.
Be ridiculous.
not this thing that was actually written.
But part of it. But I'm gonna put together a list, and I think I'm gonna do it digitally, possibly on a Google sheet, and then link to it from the website, because that is on my short list of things to do, is to redo the Tabletop Game Talk website. Not completely, just update the pages that have gone way, way too long without being updated. And I will let everyone know. It's like, oh, look at all these things. But one
do
of the things
I have a bio?
No, but we're going to do that.
Still say I didn't write a bio.
We got a lot of things going on this month. This February is going to be a big month. So
am
this
I
is
even
be
on there?
No, you're not. No, nope. But you will be. And the great thing with Fletcher is he knows how to do all this technical stuff. So I can be like, hey, Fletcher, I'm going to delegate some of this stuff.
Unlike me, the person you just drag along through it.
Hey, you do a pretty decent amount of notes. So I'll give you that. But yeah, so this, but I'm going to do this. And I'm going to put notes on the, or list all these games. And every game that comes in, all I have to do is add it to the list. And then from that point on, it's pretty easy. Just remove it from the list once it's been played once. And now I would have, well, I don't know if I'll ever have no unplayed games, but I'm going to try to get that list down as much as possible. And you guys have a much easier time because your unplayed list is less than two handfuls, I think. Yeah. So, Kitty, do you have any unplayed games?
I don't know. I think it's under five, if I have any. I'm going to go look as soon as we finish recording. I'll text you.
All right. Perfect. Okay. So we have gone long enough talking about why we don't play games and why everyone else doesn't play games. Just a reminder that next week is our feedback episode and all our feedback threads. So we're going to go through our feedback threads. We go through our email, and everyone who sends us any kind of feedback will be entered in a $50 gift card drawing. You'll get to choose whether or not it's Amazon or Cool Stuff. Kitty's going to read that to you again in a few minutes. And the next convention we'll be at, well, I will be at, is GaryCon. So if you're going to be there and you want to meet up and play a game, shoot me an email. Just put GaryCon in the subject and I should have a lot of free time. So I'm not going to sign up for anything there. I'm just kind of going to visit and hang out with friends. So if you're there and you want to meet up, let me know. Otherwise, if you want to follow us, we're on Facebook at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast, Twitter at @TabletopGameTLK. Kitty is Lawful Good Mom. I am Game Master Chris. Fletcher is Net Fletch. And you can go to our Patreon site if you want and be part of our Discord channel as soon as I have it all set up. and a bunch of other cool things, because all our patrons are automatically entered into our gift card drawings as well. Even though it doesn't say it on the Patreon anymore, I do it anyway because patrons are cool. And you can check that out at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com, and you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jill Jim, George, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Etchiretti, Samir Biswas, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz,
Michael Ohl, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Hong, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrocht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks,
Jerry Fisher, David Retke, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartel, Jordan Livingston, Anne Reynolds,
Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate Faz Flintham, Sean Peck, Eric Seelander, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, oh my gosh, you've done it to me now, Chris. Trevor Davis,
Wesley Taylor, Tim Vering, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, Timothy Gross, Glenn Cotter, Jesse Okoviak, Barry Peterson, Ben Gary, Emil Jewell, Jacobson, and Marina Stevens.
Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. I have nothing to talk about here.
Having a baby melts your brain. You haven't slept in weeks. I should have come up with something.
It's all right. It's all right. Next time. Good night.
Good night. Good night.